Welcome to CEO Power Talk, a global conversation to shift our world into a place of healing, restoration, and implementation of solutions to the social and economic issues that paralyze us and leaves us feeling frustrated. I am your host, Laura C. Bullock, and I am so very excited to be here with you today. As a strategic coach, I believe the only way for us to create the life we want is to break through the barriers that paralyze us, challenge that status quo, and to stand firm for the life that we want. I am so excited to be here with you today to share with you my guest, Dr. Tamika Lam Sanders. Dr. Sanders is an entrepreneur who has decided to become an educator to address the lack of minority faculty in higher education and serve as a role model for students of color who rarely see their ethnic groups represented in academia. She has had over 10 years of experience working with schools and businesses in the areas of teaching, training, curriculum design, public programming, strategic planning, and professional development. Her passion is arts education and creating strategic partnerships between students, learning institutions, and communities in which they reside. To further her passion, Dr. Sanders started her company, SavvyPen, in 2009. Dr. Sanders' work in the community earned her invitation to speak at the TEDx Phoenix Salon about community sustainability in 2012, a Community Luminary Award in 2014, and a recent nomination for the 2015 Humanities Rising Star Award to individuals using creative approaches to engage the public in humanities topics. So please join me and welcome Dr. Tamika Lam. Sanders, excuse me.
Thank you, Laura. I'm so excited to be a part of the show.
Thank you. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about your passion, your purpose, and social responsibility for your community. So I want to start by just giving folks that may not know you personally, giving them a little introduction to Dr. Sanders and SavvyPen Consultants and how it came to be.
Yeah. Well, I come from, I guess I'll go all the way back. So I'm an artist, I'm a poet, a storyteller, an actress, and when I do a lot of work with schools. And SavvyPen came about because I was doing, first, before it was SavvyPen, I was doing a lot of volunteer work with the Boys and Girls Club, City of Phoenix, doing some of their creative writing programs, and all of that for free. And when I was thinking about going back to school to get my master's in business, I thought about wanting to start that as a business and then just expand it. But then I also had a lot of training and development background from my on my corporate side, and so I wanted to be able to incorporate both, so provide training and development for companies, but then also have the fun arts and education part for schools, and that's how SavvyPen came about. And I've been doing it since 2009 and just really having a great time working with companies, looking at diversity and inclusion, looking at how to be a leader and a lot of other professional development, but also working with schools, doing the creative writing, getting to talk about bullying and Black history and women's history and other just issues, you know, ethnic studies and social justice, all of these great issues in schools that teachers and students are talking about.
And you know, speaking of Black history, I read an article in Voyage Phoenix, which was an interview with you, and you talked a lot about why education is so important to you. Can you share that a little bit? I think you were talking about how, you know, when you looked at Black history, there was a huge gap in there. Can you kind of share that with our guests?
Yeah. Gosh, on multiple levels, right? So being a native of Arizona and Phoenix, most of the time I was like that token black girl or just person of color in my schools, growing up all the way till I got to high school and I went to South Mountain. But so in my, so not only was I that one, like one of maybe five or six people of color out of my whole school, I was usually the only person of color and black person in my classes. So I got really excited thinking about, you know, when it got to February and learning about Black history. And every year, no matter what school I went to, no matter what book it was, you know, a little paragraph, if that, that basically summed up Black history and our Black contribution to the U.S. as we were slaves, Emancipation Proclamation, and then Martin Luther King, right? Those were the three consistents. And But I was always really disappointed, and also just like, there has to be more than this, right? And if there's not, is this, why are they lying? Why are they keeping this from me? And I was lucky to grow up with my mom that had like books like the biography of Malcolm X, and all of these great books, and the library. So I would read these books, and I would spend hours, you know, Saturdays at the library, you know, getting books and learning this stuff. And then I would go back and look in my history book and go, why aren't these things there? And so I became really distrustful of the textbooks, of history, and I start thinking, if they're not telling me about Black history, what aren't they telling me about Hispanic and Latino history, about Indigenous history, about Asian history? And so I kind of made it my mission to just go and learn, and purposely on my own, those different histories that weren't being taught to me in school, and even at the college level, unless I took those classes as electives. So that is that love-hate relationship that lots of students of color have with the education system. We distrust it. We don't believe it's for us. And we even can may have a really negative self-esteem, thinking that, wow, so my people had nothing to do with building this country. You know, wow, so I'm nothing, right? I'm worthless. There's nothing about me that's worth uplifting. And that's a really, really sad kind of belief system that to come from if you don't have anything else telling you that narrative is not true.
So let me ask you this, then: do you feel that the community had a gap in terms of the knowledge of Black history or just history in general?
Yes, it is. It is something I think that happened right when literally when schools became desegregated, right? Before, when we had, they were segregated schools, as much as people, you know, hated that and you understand it, you were at least in those schools, and you were getting taught in your Black schools, which were taught by usually Black teachers and teachers of color, you were getting taught your history, where you came from, your leaders, your contributions. You could see that. As soon as schools got integrated, they start choosing which piece of history to teach us, right? And usually the pieces, well, not usually, all the ways, the pieces of the history that got chosen to be taught were from a Eurocentric point of view. So all the people of color and all of their contributions got kind of just kicked out of the history books. And then a lot of times parents, because if you didn't grow up with your parents talking about, you know, the contributions of famous African-Americans, you don't know enough about that yourself. So you can't teach it to your children and talk to them about it and have this conversation. And you're not, so you, they're learning it from the schools with nothing else to challenge that. And again, I was lucky. I grew up with books in our house, but my mom we didn't sit and just talk about, you know, Black history, but she had the books there to say, here's, you know, I love to read, and here are some great books. And if you want to know more, go, you know, we can go find it out. But we didn't sit and just have discussions about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Rosa Parks and, you know, famous inventors. And so I didn't even have that in my home. I was reading it, so that's how I knew it was there. So I'm trying to be purposeful and intentional with my twins that are five, to when we're talking about history right now, they're homeschooling, and they're talking about Christopher Columbus and Thanksgiving and all of these things. And then they get to Africa, and they basically just say, what's in Africa is the Sahara Desert. Like, that's it. That's all, literally, in their social studies book. And I was just like, let's go ahead and actually, let me show you Africa. Let me show you some cities. Let me show you that there's pyramids and there's, you know, all of these amazing things and cultures that come. And guess what? That's a place, that's the origin of people, of humanity, right? So I am purposely trying to teach that myself and my husband, because if you don't, the schools are not going to teach it. And they're going to continue believing that they have not made any contributions, and that they don't, their people and their culture has no value, which is so not right.
Yeah, that really isn't right. And let me just say, I am talking with Dr. Tamika Saunders, and if you want to ask her questions or you want to continue to listen in, you can dial in on 646-668-2928 #1. So, Tamika, Dr. Saunders, I know we're friends, and so I'm trying to keep it very professional.
Yeah.
But you mentioned your twins. You mentioned your husband. So let's talk about how you balance business, family, and social responsibility, because those are three very pivotal parts of who we are. And I wanted to just get some tips on how you balance those three.
Oh, yeah, that is such a great question. And you and I could probably both write a book about this because you had to do it for so long as well.
Yes, I did.
You know what? I'll start from the beginning. Once we found out, my husband and I found out that, you know, we were pregnant and that it was twins, we already from that beginning, both of us were, like, I was just barely starting my, well, I don't want to say just starting, my business was expanding, I'll say it that way. And then he writes books, he's an author, you know, doing, like, screenplays. So there was a lot that we were both striving for. And we both had to stop and say, okay, most parents, they put their dreams and their life basically on hold for 18 years until the children grow up, and then they hope that they're well enough to pick those dreams back up and pursue them. And I said, we owe it to ourselves not to do that. So at the very beginning, we started making plans to say, okay, if we're going to do this, then we are still going to be working toward our dreams. We got to hold each other accountable. It's going to be slower, but we're still going to do that. So the good thing about us is we try to, during the weeks, we give each other, like we'll say, you know, what do you got going on this week? What plans, what time do you need? And I do the same thing. And then we plan. And then we also say, what family time? Let's plan in some family time to go play, to go walk, to, you know, play a game. Right now it's teaching the babies. And so we were intentional about that, and that's how we've been able to balance it. But it's not easy. There's so many nights where me and him are both up to like 2-3 in the morning finishing stuff, because, you know, it's got to get done. And but that's how we've been able to balance it. We made a plan intentionally. We gave each other space. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have weekends. I have Saturday and Sunday to just me by myself getting my work done, whether it's in the house or out. And the same thing, sometimes he'll have weekends, Saturday and Sunday is all him, go get your stuff done. And that's the only way I've been able to balance. If I was a single parent, oh my gosh, I don't know how I could do it with twins. So props to all of the single parents, because my mom was a single parent, and she was juggling so much. So I have so much appreciation over it, because I honestly don't think I'd be able to do everything I'm doing right now and still try to, like, you know, follow my dreams, you know, and accomplish my goals. Yeah. But I want our children to see that. We wanted them to see kind of like that. You started from the bottom. Now we hear it, like, okay, we were in an apartment when you guys were born. And now look at us. We have our house. We've got our businesses. And by the time, you know, you all get 18, you're going to have, you know, all of your money for college. You're going to have investment stuff. Like, we want them to see that so that they are always inspired to know that they can do whatever they want to do. And there's nothing better than seeing that in action versus just seeing your parents already done. They have all their money, but that's it. You didn't get to see them build it. So the different feeling, and we wanted our children to see that.
And that is really amazing, because you're right. Not many parents get that opportunity. And I think that is a great tip to share, is that you have to be intentional. You have to create a plan. And then have agreement where you're holding each other accountable. That's amazing. So let me ask you about a little bit more about Savvy Pen and the students you serve. And so tell me about this unique combination of arts education, and what are some of the outcomes that you're hoping students will achieve from the type of programming that you offer?
So when I think about arts education, so for example, one of my I'll start with just programs. So when I think about, I've gotten to do programs for math, for social studies, for English, for just any of those kinds of regular types of, you know, subjects, and even science as well. But I think the arts component, what I always drive at is showing the importance of creativity. And that's why when they put the A in STEM, so now it's STEAM, I was like, that is important. I was like, without imagination, the Wright brothers would have never thought about flying a plane, thinking, you know, a big chunk of metal was going to be up in the sky with people and luggage. No one would have thought about that. No one would have thought about going to the moon. So when I said education and putting it into every component that is a required, reading, English, math, science, social studies, is you are getting people to look at that content differently, and you're getting them to imagine and make that content relevant. So in science, I will have the art sometimes is having them think about their food. Like, okay, these are all the chemicals, and here's your food. Now go find your favorite food that you like to eat, and let's kind of dig into some of those ingredients. And now let's also write a story or write, a poem or think about how these chemicals are doing in your body, right? So then it's making them think about it different, and the next time they reach for that food that probably they find out isn't as healthy as good as it tastes, and then they're going to go, that might make me think different about that. or thinking about math, right? And looking at, instead of just doing, geometry, you actually take them outside and say, now, let's look at, find some geometric shapes, find some right angles, take a picture of them. How many triangles can you find? How many squares? Let's create a picture with that, right? And so it's making them just think about those subjects differently. In English and reading, again, it's a lot easier because it's straight on. So it's stories, it's perspectives. What is the meaning of the story? What are the meaning of the words? But it's also having them critically think about the what they're reading and what they're hearing so that they can respond to it and think about how do I feel about this and what can I do about it. So that's how I bring art in, and that's what I want students to think, is to think creatively, look at things, be critical, and not just accept the information that's given to them.
And, the critical thinking and the creativity, that's such an important aspect of learning. And I think that's the one thing that we can take all the way into adulthood, right, is that critical thinking and being creative. How do we make adjustments when we need to? So let's talk a little bit more about, Savvy Pen. And what were some of the challenges, or maybe one of the most challenging aspects of Savvy Pen as it began to grow and develop?
It was funding. There was, and because I love my company, I love arts, I didn't know how to charge for my service. Like, that was so hard. Mm. And I'm not the best marketer either, because I don't go and brag about things. A lot of times people don't even know I'm doing something until they see me there. I was like, I really have to get good with promotions, and I have to not be afraid to charge my price and ask for it and stand by it. And then with schools, a lot of times they couldn't always afford my programs. So I had to get good at writing grants. That's where my grant writing skills, I'm like, thank goodness I'm a good writer, but writing and writing grants is still very different. And so I kind of had to learn that skill so that I could write grants in partnership with the schools and the organizations that I wanted to offer my programs, but they couldn't maybe afford it on their own. So that was the challenge, is just, and most, I think most business owners, probably yourself included, could think like, gosh, what do I charge? What's fair and just for my work? But also, how do I stand by that price, especially if it's a project you really want to do and that you probably would do for free, but you can't do everything for free.
wouldn't support those dreams you have for your children, right? For your family.
Exactly. Right. And I've learned that when people don't pay for something, they value it so much less. And even if it's a dollar they have to pay, if it's something that they're paying, they value it more. And so I've realized that, and I'm like, no, the work I'm doing is valuable. And if they were offering it to somebody else, they would pay them. So they need to pay.
Yes.
Me
too. Yes. Well, I was listening to a really good audio book by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, and his recommendation was, he says, charge your worth and then add tax. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I thought
I like
that was so powerful. I told him I'm going to use that.
I might have to use that too and just give him credit. Like, that is perfect.
Yes, give him credit, honey. It was charge tax and add, charge your worth and then add tax. Yes.
Add the tax.
I got to add the tax. So as a CEO, what steps did you take in your business to respond to COVID-19?
You know what? That was a big one. I had to, because working with schools, a lot of what I do is in person. Even working with organizations and doing, you know, their training and development, a lot of it's in person. So as soon as that hit, I was lucky to be a part of, I do some like in schools, AZ Speaks with Arizona Humanities does a, they offer like free speakers for K through 12 schools. And they were doing mm-hmm. some of their talks that we have in their catalog, and they were videotaping them and recording them for us. And I was like, that's what I need to do. I have to go back and, and a lot of my talks that I do, I need to go and get them videotaped, get a videographer, get them all scripted, and then put them on my site, which I'm still in the process of that part because there's so many of them, and create a new kind of part to my website that has a mm-hmm. list of all of them and maybe just kind of a quick little intro snippet, you know, about each topic. So that it could be offered to companies or schools. But that's what I had to do. I had to realize this is virtual, and I may not mm-hmm. have the opportunity for a very long time to get back in front of people the way I used to. But it was mm-hmm. also a step forward because I've always wanted to go out of the country into lots of states and cities and speak. And because mm-hmm. I have a family, I don't always love to now travel for that long and be away from my family.
Right.
So I was like, this gave me the opportunity to be in whatever country, whatever state that I want to be in with this and still be mm-hmm. there virtually. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, they listen to the presentation and then they have me on for the Q&A after to talk and discuss. So that sped up that part of my business, which I don't think would have happened for a very, like, longer because I didn't need to. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm getting to have that global reach, and I'm super excited mm-hmm. about where it takes me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that global reach is really going to be very powerful, I think, in terms of education. And so when mm-hmm. you think about that, how do you feel the education system has been impacted? Because mm-hmm. I'm sure it's made some serious shifts in education as a whole. So what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, gosh. I feel like every parent, as an educator and working with schools, I already knew the job of being a teacher, especially in K through 12, is super hard, and I wouldn't want to do mm-hmm. it. So that's why I'm a special program teacher. I don't want to go there and teach every day, every year, you know, because that's a lot. And I think all the parents right now that are going through and having to teach their children, they, if they mm-hmm. don't value the work that those teachers are doing, and when next time they ask for a raise and we don't give it to them and demand it, I think that's a big one. So it's really showing how vulnerable teachers are, how unsupported and unprepared sometimes they are with their districts in their training. And I know, for example, when this happened with COVID, I think the schools, they weren't meeting and having, I think maybe a week or two before school, you know, was there. Some of them, then they got to go back and do their classrooms and then kind of think about how they were going to do this their classes virtually. But they didn't give them a lot of training and a lot of time. A week or two is not enough mm-hmm. to change all of your curriculum into an online mm-hmm. Content, right? That's very different. And you can't just sit kids in K through 12 in front of a computer all day long and lecture to them like you would in a classroom without breaks, without engagement, without interaction. Mm-hmm. That is a completely, that's just not going to be a way for them to learn. But that's what a lot of schools are doing because they didn't have the chance to pivot. They didn't have the training to be prepared to actually do it the right way. So that scares me a lot. And so I remember when my husband and I were talking about it, I was like, I don't think the schools are going to be able to do this. So I'm going to enroll our twins into a school that is already virtual. So they've already worked out the kinks. They know what they're doing, and they're going to be able to deliver the instruction and the assignments and activities the way they're supposed to be doing so that our children's learning is not being hindered, right? And their engagement is not being hindered. But it's exposing. So COVID has done that. It did not prepare teachers and schools in the way it could have and should have during that break when we were all off. That could have been a really great time for them to plan. But maybe they didn't do it because they were hoping that we would be able to go back to school and it would be fine. Second, it really exposed the vulnerability of the inequality, I'd say, of the schools, mm-hmm. which if you're a person of color, you know this exists already. But I think other communities are able to see there's no computers, there's no internet, You may not have the right books and resources. You may not have parents that understand enough intellectually to help you with the work that you're learning. So it exposed a lot of that, which is really sad because now those students, for better or worse, are going to end up probably being behind. And so, yeah, it's been really, really, really problematic. And I don't know how we're going to move past it. There are schools, I think, here that opened up this week and they're letting people back. But, you know, that's a scary thing as well because we don't know we don't understand how this disease works yet, and we don't know enough about it to stop the spread behind, you know, washing hands and wearing masks. So we'll see how that goes. Those are the big things with schools. It's just the inequality, the lack of preparedness and the skills and the training, that's usually what happens to teachers. They don't get prepared. They don't get the training that they need. They're learning it on their own and as they go. And that's not a key solution for learning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, along with or coupled with, I should say, not having a real solid message around the public health issue we were facing, I think that also set the schools up for the position they're in right now. I mean, we didn't get the right information. It wasn't as accurate as it could have been. And the directives, I think, were a lot missed. So I agree with you that it really did expose not only the education system, but I would say a number of industries. Because we have some industries that have failed and they can't come back. So I agree with you, exposing the vulnerability of those other industries as well. So that's a big deal. So let's switch gears a little bit. So tell me, who inspires you and why?
Oh man, when I think of people that inspire me, there's so many. When it comes to women, I think of people like Audre Lorde, a poet. It's mostly like poets and writers. So Audre Lorde is a famous writer, black lesbian writer, and she wrote this poem called Coal, which I love. It's basically in explaining that, you know, you like this piece of coal that's black. It seems like it has no worth, but with time and pressure, it's going to be a diamond. And I love that poem and that analogy because it always made me think about, and her work and her words as well. So she's one of the people that inspires me, but I'm also inspired by a lot of our youth right now. I get such an opportunity to work with a lot of young people that just give me so much hope and inspiration for the future that we're going to be all right. You know, if we can make it till they get older to take control, they're going to have it. You know, they're going to fix a lot of the things that we're doing if we can, you know, not mess it up so much when we hand it off. So those are the things I get really inspired by a lot of just activists around the world. So I'm trying to think, there's so many. When I have to think of names, I'm like, also Zora Neale Hurston, another poet and writer that was in kind of the Black Arts Movement with like Langston Hughes. I always love her because she died in an unmarked grave and poor because when integration was happening, she didn't believe in it. She was like, you know, if you have to fight to be at a table where you're not welcome, you're never going to feel equal and you're never going to be welcomed at that table. And that always resonated with me because I started looking at just black culture and our identity. As soon as that happened with integration, there was such a cultural educational divide, and it's one we haven't ever been able to get back. And so those are when I think about politics and structures and systems, I always think about her and her work as an anthropologist traveling and talking to different cultures and people and learning and documenting. So, but yeah, those are two women that really inspire me, and then the youth that I work with. But also people like you. You're one of my role models. I have Brenda Thompson from the Humanities Council. I've got so many just black women that are leaders that I look up to that I'm like, yep, I want to be you when I grow up, you know. So I appreciate
and I think we're probably looking at that and saying you. Oh yes, absolutely. I think we're looking at you saying, girl, you're doing some amazing things. Talk to me a little bit about social responsibility and how you feel we should all be contributing. Talk to me a little bit about that and kind of where your values fit inside social responsibility.
So that's a big one. And now that I've gone back I get to work with a lot of organizations. So when I think about social responsibility, I'm always looking at, and my own responsibility as a person, if the ideal of that talented tenth is what started it, but it just went kind of awry. But the more you have, the more you should be able to give back. So if you make it up to that high and you're in that 10% of, you know, talented people, your job is supposed to be to reach back and help other people get up there. And that philosophy kind of fails because a lot of the talented tenth, the ideal, they got there and they just left and they just stayed with their other talented tenth people and didn't go back in the community and build a bridge to lift those people back up. So it's like the philosophy was good, but the reality of it was didn't go that way. So that's how I always think about myself. If I am able to climb that ladder and get to the highest point, what bridge can I build back for the people behind me to follow? And how can I lead them to that bridge and help sure that they have the support they need to get to where I am and higher, right, and past me? Mm-hmm. And I think that's companies as well. If you have, you know, dollars and you are in a community, you know, a percentage of those dollars need to be going back to that community to help them with the resources that they need, whether it's internships, it's jobs, it's career building, it's entrepreneurship, it's whatever those things are, they need to be going back. And so that's one of the big things I get to work with companies with as well when they're thinking about diversity and inclusion and who are your customers, who are your clients, who are you serving and why. That's a big one that I highlight for them is where is your money going? Who are you investing in? Mm-hmm. What does your leadership team look like? You know, is it all older white men? Is it all white people, period, whether it's men and women? Or is it diverse in age and ethnicity and gender? You know, and if it's not, maybe you should be thinking about it, because those are kind of gems that you're missing out on by not having those people and perspectives as part of your leadership team. So that's what I think about corporate responsibility. It is our responsibility to give back and to give back in a meaningful way, not just go give money just because, but how is it making an impact and a difference in the communities and the lives of those people? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is very powerful. And I completely agree with you that if we don't take advantage of those little gems that are out there and pour into them, shine and buff them up when we need to, that we're going to miss out on something pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your personal and your professional support system, because we know as women, we need to have a support system. We need to be able to fill our cup when necessary. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't do that, we're not able to give back. We're not able to be committed to our community. So talk to us a little bit about your personal and then your professional support system.
Yeah, my personal community, it is really, if I didn't have arts and I didn't have open mics and like creative writing to be able to just sit and just create and be inspired and listen, I think that would hurt a lot, especially in a time like this. There's so much political, social, just everything unrest, right? And if I didn't have a way to unplug and in a good, healthy way to pour out my emotions, my thoughts, I think I would probably just go mad and just scream and be angry all the time. So, you know what I mean? Because, like, every time you turn on the news today, I feel like you just want to scream. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yes.
And what I do is I take a moment back and I think about, okay, I can't solve this, but what can I do, right? And sometimes it's not that. I just like, let me go write. Just get all these thoughts out. And then I can go back and read them when I feel, you know, better, you know, and work on it, you know, or the what can I do, right? So that's my personal outlet is art. That's always been there, and I'm glad that my husband is an artistic person too, writing stories, and so we get to play off things like that. And then professionally, I've been really lucky to be part of women's arts organizations, but also just women in the nonprofit world and women's groups that are like sister circles and other great things where we can get together as women and just talk and be there for each other and lift each other up and say, hey, what do you need, sis? How are you doing? I see you, you know, great job. Just those things, because professionally, we need that. And As women, we're not always welcomed in every room and every door. So when you have other women leaders that are in those doors and that can open them for you, that is beyond amazing. And so professionally, I've been really lucky to have people recommend me for something or, you know, just say, oh, refer me to, you know, someone. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. And I do the same for them. So that helps.
and those circles are so important. And there are a number of them out in the community. And I just challenge everyone to find that circle that they need to support them.
Yeah.
Whether it's professionally or personally. I love the art piece of it. I used to always say that I'm not very creative, but I tend to find myself in spaces that are doing very creative things. And so, I have to change that language about myself and not refer to myself as not being creative. And so I'm losing that phrase.
Good.
So what's next for Savvy Pen? What's next for Savvy Pen? And then what's next for Dr. Saunders?
Oh, man. So that's such a great question. And I think the next part of that global part that I talked about earlier, is just seeing now that we're in this virtual world and we're globally, we're very small because the internet and the virtual reality connects us in a way that we couldn't be connected before. So for Savvy Pen, that is the goal, is to how can I get more a bigger reach and some partnerships that are global partnerships where I can, like, I have a MLK creative writing contest that we give $100 to 4 winners, and it's for grades 6 through 12 about a dream they have for themselves, their community. But I could make that dollar amount so much higher and make the global, you know, the impact, and have that contest where it's like around the world, you know. I would love to see that. I would also love to see the state, the kind of curriculum that we're putting in our books and our texts be a lot more diverse and a lot more multicultural, to include all of the stories that shaped America, not just the ones from a Eurocentric kind of perspective. So that is those are two of my goals for Savvy Pen, is to have those dialogues, but also have action behind them. Not just talk about the change, but how can I be on those boards, be influencing the Department of Education, be influencing the people writing the textbooks, so that that change can be there. For me as Dr. Saunders, oh gosh, it's articles. You know, having a PhD, most of my friends that have PhDs, they have so many articles and things written, and I've been so busy doing the work that I haven't really gotten the time to really write the articles. And even though the work goes into my presentations and the research, I have not had the time to like write and really publish the way that I should as a PhD. So that's my doctor goal.
That's the doctor
part. You need to get some articles in there and make sure that, you know, that you're getting published so that your other PhDs and other doctorates in that field, that's how they call on you to be an expert, is when they see those journals and those things, those accolades that are there, besides just me speaking, because they love that, but I need that other part for myself as well.
Yes.
And then personally, getting more doctors. I think every time I go in front of students, especially students of color, and I say I'm a doctor, that just excites them, and they're like, wow, but you look so young, and how did you do it? And it lets them know that they can be it too, and that if they want it, they can get it, because now they have a real example of someone that looks like them, came out of the same hard background as them, but made it despite that. So that's my other personal goal, is make more Black doctors.
That is a great goal. And I think, you know, to be able to put some real focus into that type of an initiative is so powerful. Because that is how you're going to make those changes. That is how you're going to get people in positions where they can impact policy, systems, and really change that curriculum once and for all. I love that.
Yeah.
So I just want to remind my guests, if they would like to ask Dr. Saunders questions, we're going to take a moment shortly to do that. But I also want to ask you about how can people find you? Where are you at? Where is your footprint out?
I know, and it's different where you find me. So if you're in the open mics, find me before the pandemic, you could find me at like places like Poetic Soul on a Wednesday. When Home-Based Poetry was there with HB, you could find me there. But now you're probably going to find me when things get back to normal. It would be at different conferences related to social justice, ethnic studies, multicultural initiatives, and even activist things going on in our community. I'm usually right there, and if I'm not right there, then I'm promoting it. So that's where I love to be. Arts, education, community, those three things, if they have any of those ties, you will normally find me there. And right now, it's home. You're going to find me at home or hiking with my family or taking our walk. We try to get out, you know, every day. We sometimes go to Piestewa Peak, sometimes South Mountain, sometimes the Rio Salado. So those are our other fun places to just go and hang out as a family and get out the house a little bit.
Well, I really enjoy your pictures that you guys share when you're in Sedona, which is one of my favorite places. And I always try to figure out which trail are they on. I need to see that trail so I can go there too. Well, I just want you to know with the with the goal that you have to really have a global impact, you know, it really lines up with what CEO Power Talk is all about. Because we are trying to have this global conversation that's going to shift things, the way we're thinking, the way we feel. It's going to help restore communities and individuals and businesses and industry. So I'm excited that you're our first guest on this program. But, you know, before we take any questions, what kind of tips would you give a CEO that is either just starting or trying to find her balance between family, purpose, and really your passion? What kind of tips would you share for her or him?
That is a really good one. So the first one is really have a clear plan of what you want to do, why you want to do it, and who is it meant for. That changed for me so many times, but once I got that clear, who is my audience, what am I doing, and why am I doing it, really, really helped me. And then from that plan, then I was able, or from that kind of outline, I was able to build a plan. I knew if it was going to be schools, I knew where I had to go, right? I knew if it was for businesses, I knew where I had to go. But also what types of businesses, small, large, nonprofit, for-profit, right? And then look at your time. Look at your time and your finances, because as you know, those two things are important. So how much time do you have to actually do the things that you want to do? How much resources? So finances do you have, and what do you need to get there further? And what can you start doing right now? And then, you know, a couple months from the line, and then, you know, have that timeline. Like now, a couple months, end of the year. So build that timeline so that you are doing something every day to help you get to that goal, even if it's little, right? It might not be, might be really slow, but that's okay. You're working toward it, and that gives you the confidence and that power to like, okay, I'm checking off my list. I'm getting there. It's slow, but I'm making progress, right? And then know what your worth is, and add the tax. I'm going to say add the tax.
Know
what your worth is. Yeah, and do not be afraid to ask for that price, and don't back down for it. You know, I know in the beginning you may do some things at a discount or for free just to get the referrals and get yourself out there, but you don't always have to do that. If what you are building is unique and it's new, you don't have to start out that way. They might be your first client, but they don't know that. Charge your worth and stick to that price.
Awesome. And I tell you, sometimes we think we have to do the big thing, right? We have to do this big grandiose thing to launch, and it's not true at all. And
it's
having that plan, though, that's the most important thing. And knowing the why am I doing it and who is it for, that's the most important piece as well. Is who is it for? Yeah. Because we do a lot of things, but we don't really know who our audience is. So that is wonderful. Tamika, I just want to thank you so much. You've been such a dream to talk to. I know you and I have many conversations, but this has been something that's very targeted and very intentional, and it has been such a blessing to talk with you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited, and thanks so much for having me on, because Like I said, yes, we do go way back, but you are an inspiration and you're always kind of moving and shaking. So I'm always excited
to see
what you're doing. And thanks for having me on the show to kind of be a part of that. Mm-hmm.
You're so very welcome. And I'd like to thank again my guest, Dr. Tamika Saunders, my Power Talk community, and my marketing team for ensuring our voices are heard through CEO Power Talk podcast program. Our next topic on October 13th at 6 p.m., we're going to pay homage to the notorious RBG, which I feel was a catalyst for historic, groundbreaking decision-making that has shaped the history of women. And we wouldn't be who we are today if we did not take a moment to acknowledge her and what she's meant to this country and to the journey of women. I also want you to know that you can follow us on Living Vertical at www.blogtalkradio.com/livingvertical. You can also follow me on Facebook at CEO Power Talk, and my Instagram channel is CEO Power Talk as well. This is your host, Laura C. Bullock, and you are tuned in to CEO Power Talk. Thank you for listening.